This summer, the world must answer one question. Why has no one made a popsicle that gets you high yet?
That's right, it's summer, and it's time for you to get your hands on America's new favorite product, Danksicles. 20 milligrams of THC in two great flavors, the latest and greatest innovation from IndiCloud.
Is IndiCloud the greatest company to come out of America? Maybe. But what we do know for sure is that IndiCloud is the best way to get dispensary-grade cannabis delivered directly to your door, 100% legally. Yes, they ship legally to all states. No medical card needed. Whether it's vapes as big as your head, flowers you won't find in your mom's garden, or, of course, popsicles that get you high as what are you waiting for? Go to IndiCloud.co/spring24 and get discreet delivery on top-shelf THC products. Head over to IndiCloud.co/spring24, that's co, not com, to snag 30% off your first order.
This is Across the Streams Media Podcast.
The Beach Boys, and I was their music teacher 20-some years ago, were average red-blooded American young boys. They had their problems. Sometimes Carl and his brother were not in class when they're supposed to be. Brian was out doing things. In his class, he often did things that he wasn't supposed to be. There's a story about it. He wrote a composition for me, and it turned out to be surfing. Well, that surfing composition got an F, but it made $1 million.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast. I'm your host, Scott White, and I'm joined once again by my good friend, Mr. Timothy Howard.
Thank you.
So what we're doing today is the 1976 TV movie or TV special, It's Okay. The Beach Boys, It's Okay. And this was a very unique thing. It's hard to find on the internet, and it's one of the few writing credits of John Belushi. This was written by Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi, Lorne Michaels, and Alan Zweibel. And like I said, it came out in 1976. It's sort of a pseudo-documentary about the Beach Boys, and we follow the Beach Boys around, and then there's a Beach Boys concert, and then you know, we get some comedy sketches in there written by those four gentlemen. And it was just something unique, something that I didn't know existed until a few years ago. And so I did find it, and we're going to talk about that right now. It's one of the few writing credits of John Belushi. John Belushi, from what I was told, was much like John Candy, where they had a bunch of ideas, but they never wrote anything down. That's where Dan came in. Like, Belushi, not that Dan didn't have an idea, but, like, Belushi would come up with an idea and Dan would put it down on paper. So there's a couple of really unique things about this right off the bat. So this was 1976, so it was either the end of the first season or the beginning of the second season of Saturday Night Live.
Right.
So at this point, John and Dan are not household names. They haven't become famous from Saturday Night Live yet. However, the Beach Boys, everybody knows the Beach Boys, and so this is their first concert back after Brian Wilson. Brian Wilson had a nervous breakdown. If you know the Bare Naked Ladies song, Brian Wilson in Bed, Brian Wilson had a nervous breakdown and was basically, he basically lied in bed for 3.5 years. And this chronicles his first concert back after getting out of bed. You can tell that because he is, like, really, really bloated in this special. Like, the other Beach Boys, they look older, but they have been performing for all this time.
Far more ambulatory.
Of course, how else are you going to look if you don't move for 3.5 years?
Well, and the look on his face, to me at least, said, I'm not entirely sure I want to be here.
This is going to be sort of an odd podcast because this is basically a Beach Boys concert film. Yet 90% of this movie, this special, is just the Beach Boys in concert. So if you love the Beach Boys, you're really going to like this. You're going to like seeing them and seeing their music, or listening to their music, I should say. Now, how long have you been a Beach Boys fan? When did you discover the Beach Boys? Or I should ask, are you even a Beach Boys fan?
Yeah, very much so. In fact, I think the Beach Boys are a little bit transcendent. My daughter, who wasn't even born until 1992, is a huge Beach Boys fan. I grew up really appreciating the Beach Boys before I appreciated the Beatles. By 1976, though, the Beach Boys could not have been more irrelevant to the music scene at that time, because you got the rise of disco at this point. And so, and retro wasn't cool yet, and it wasn't hip yet. And so the Beach Boys were kind of get lost in the wilderness there for a while, you know. And so, yeah, I was always a Beach Boys fan. And although with a couple of caveats, I have a copy of the Pet Sounds album. And I know everybody talks about all the innovation. It's one of the best albums ever made. I couldn't stand it. I've tried listening to it. I've tried I just don't see it. And yeah, the Beach Boys had a lot of influence on the Beatles. In fact, I think one of the best Beach Boys songs ever written was Back in the USSR by the Beatles. But in any case, they were definitely mimicking the whole Beach Boys sound and the beat sound. And Beach Boys music made me want to live in California. It made me want to go out there. That it was just supposed such a wonderful place to be. And so the whole California sound and all of the others like Jan and Dean and the other groups from California at the time just evoked this image of the ideal, you know, California, not the stuck on the Ventura Freeway for 2 hours to try to get, you know, from one place to the other, but the ideal before it became overcrowded, or actually getting overcrowded about that time. And so a big fan of the music.
Now, you say they were irrelevant in 1976, and I guess I can sort of see that, because some of the band members have sort of adopted the disco style of the time. Mike Love is out front. He's wearing this golden, you know, I don't know, reflecting golden vest and jacket. And one of them is wearing like a giant, of course it was bicentennial, but this giant USA top hat.
What I should say, to be, you know, more, you know, professorly precise with my language, they weren't selling records, but it was understood even in the 70s when disco was being big and everything, that a Beach Boys concert was a good time. That the Beach Boys were kind of like the Grateful Dead in that point. That Grateful Dead concerts were events. Beach Boys concerts were events. That you could listen to all the classic songs. Now, in the video, I did notice, I mean, this is also prior to MTV. In the video, they show the entire song. They never cut away from a song. They never shorten it. They don't just show part of the song or clips of the song. What they show you, the whole song. So it is like a, you know, tribute to their music. And they wanted to make sure that, you know, the music was just kind of untouched throughout the video. To a modern generation of folks who've watched music videos and the whole bit, it would seem, I would think, just a little bit stilted, a little bit slow. Because, you know, once the song starts, you're going to watch the whole song. They'll do the stuff like, you know, go from one camera angle to another, that kind of thing, and show somebody on the drums, and then Mike Love out front doing his Mick Jagger impression. You can definitely tell it's post-Mick Jagger Beach Boys, where Mike Love's making many of the same moves like Jagger, literally. But because you go back and you look at the old videos of the Beach Boys, they were much closer to, you know, the Beatles on Ed Sullivan kind of thing, just kind of standing there playing rock, you know, playing their guitar, singing into the microphone. And then this video starts off with Mike Love looking like he's doing an impression of Mick Jagger on the stage in the concert.
Then at one part in the special, they interview a guy named Van Dykes Park, who was a frequent collaborator with Brian Wilson. And he talks about how, you know, at one point, you know, the Beach Boys wore the striped shirt and the tennis shoes. And he also brings up that while the Beach Boys' popularity grew, people really started to make fun of them for being this squeaky, clean-cut looking group of guys.
I have a motive in being here. I don't enjoy standing in the sun and looking like a Ricketts reject. I don't surf. But I came to California at the time when the Beach Boys surfaced.
I wrote with Van Dyke Parks more than anyone else. He's my favorite collaborator.
I mean, I've recently met some Beatles, the individuals, and I hold nothing against them. They're handsome, but they're also transcontinental. That's too much for me. I like the fact that, you know, one time Dennis Wilson, who could take me by storm like a straw in the wind, but I'll tell you this, I don't mean to characterize this guy. He's got a lot of meat. But Dennis came back from a tour in England, and everybody was making fun of him. They said they had tennies on and striped shirts, and it's almost like there was a point when the Beach Boys would deny that they were ever at the beach, you know, where the land comes down to the water.
Right, especially when they went to England.
So that's when the transformation started to take place. You know, they grew their hair a little longer, grew the beards, just started dressing more like, you know, they made the... tried to make the transition into their hippie phase at this point in their career.
And yet they still had a very clear, clean-cut image, even in the 70s and everything. They may be dressing differently, a little bit differently. Their hair may be longer. They all may have beards instead of being clean-cut. But they still had this image of being like a very clean... They had nobody sitting there, you know, talking about, oh, yeah, you know, Mike Love had a heroin overdose or some shit like that. But I mentioned that in the context of, I don't know if it's 82 or 84, but early in the Reagan administration. You see, the Beach Boys always had a 4th of July concert in Washington, D.C. at the mall. And they would usually, you know, fill the mall with people there to see the Free Beach Boys concert put on by the Department of the Interior. Well, Reagan had this guy, James Watt, who was a complete asshole. At one point, he ends up testifying before Congress after he left that, yes, he did personally profit as Secretary of the Interior, but what are you going to do about it? Literally, ha-ha in their faces. Literally, say, ha-ha. Anyway, he canceled the Beach Boys concert. Once, because he said that he didn't want those kind of people, you know, to be coming to Washington, D.C. And as it turns out, the two biggest fans of the Beach Boys in Washington, D.C. in the early 80s was Ron and Nancy Reagan. They were huge Beach Boy fans. That's how straight arrowish they were. That's how clean cut their image was. And Nancy Reagan was extremely upset publicly and got into a fight with the Secretary of the Interior. So the Secretary of the Interior, he just heard that they were a rock band. He didn't know who the hell they were. That even, you know, that even the Beach Boys, as clean cut as we think of them, as mainstream as we think of them, to really ultra conservative, white, upper class people, they were still considered counterculture. They, you know, that anything rock and roll other than Elvis was off limits. And this is the early 80s. Now people here are going to go, well, that was 40 years ago and things were a lot different then. It's like, no, trust me, even in 82, that seemed like way, way out of bounds to ban the Beach Boys from the 4th of July concert. So absolutely clean cut. You know, it was, you know, even folks like my dad could listen to the Beach Boys, you know, kind of thing without feeling threatened.
Well, speaking of dad, we have a little clip in here. They talk about their dad, and they talk about how their dad was their biggest fan. The reason that they became the Beach Boys was because of their dad, because of the drive that he put in them. But they also hint at that they were all sort of scared of their dad as well. He wasn't a guy to be messed with. Sort of had like a Jackson 5 vibe to it when all three brothers were sitting around the piano talking about their dad.
Other documentaries on the Beach Boys, which are far less kind to their dad than how he was portrayed in this documentary, because they do mention him, that he was the driving force, that he was the guy who got them going. and made them the big stars that they became, and was, and he was a micromanager as well. And in this video, you know, they refer to him, oh yeah, this never would have happened if not for Dad, kind of a thing. That Dad must have still been alive in 1976. I didn't research that. But they talked about him, you know, in almost, well, it wasn't glowing terms, but it was positive.
Respectful terms.
Now I've seen documentaries. I saw that movie, and I can't even think of the actress's name who produced it, that she was in The 40-Year-Old Virgin, and now she's a big star. Even though, and she was in The Hunger Games. Anyway, she did a movie about, based on the relationship between Brian Wilson and his girlfriend. And it was far, far darker. That apparently the relationship between the dad and the boys was just far more controlling, not quite to the point of the Menendez parents and the Menendez boys, but which, by the way, were also like in RCA Records and the whole bit. But just, it's a really dark movie about how, in some ways, it was his dad who was responsible for Brian Wilson's nervous breakdown. I mean, he told him who he could go out with, who he couldn't go out with, and tried to control every single aspect of his life beyond just the singing and the whole bit. So the dad must have still been alive in 1976 when this was happening. Because, boy, once he was gone, it's the story. And it's not just based on the one, you know, movie that I saw in a theater. And other things I've seen and read about it is that, just like Michael Jackson's dad, he was just really, really over the top as far as controlling their lives and stuff.
They wrote a song in this about their dad, how one night he snuck into their room and cut their hair while they were sleeping. That was the song that they performed in this. So it was a bit of a tongue-in-cheek song. Like you said, he was probably still alive. They weren't taking too many shots at him. But it's sort of like a ha-ha.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like, you know, crazy dad there, just, you know, going a little bit over the, you know, dad just really cares about us and the whole bit. And now it just looks so very, very, very dark.
This was not supposed to, meant to be a heavy
documentary.
Not at all. This was their comeback special, yeah.
And I would imagine their dad was there looking at everything, if, in fact, he was still around by 76. Again, I should have researched it, didn't. But there were some interesting visuals as well. They do try to do music videos, basically, especially with I Get Around, that you hear the song, but you're mostly watching acrobatic airplanes, which I thought was an interesting choice.
Well, okay, so that's, there's a scene in this where this acrobat, he's dressed as a human fly.
Yes, I remember the whole thing.
Straps himself to a plane.
A jet.
It's not one of those biplanes that you've seen people standing.
Yeah, because there are people who routinely do that, wing walkers, that kind of thing, strap themselves onto a World War I style plane. No, this was a freaking like 737 kind of thing, which would be even more dangerous today because the odds of this plane actually holding together is, you know, far less.
So I'm watching this, and the guy in the special, he looked familiar. He looked like a guy that was in Marvel Comics, and I looked it up, and there it certainly was. The guy, the stuntman in the video, they based a superhero on him, a stuntman that fought crime in the late 70s. And he had like 19 or 24 issues called The Human Fly. And the character, the human fly from the Marvel Comics, was based on this guy who actually strapped himself to a jet.
They show the guy getting strapped up and, you know, to the jetliner, and the jetliner actually getting up and flying around. because we didn't have social media back then, I guess. But that was an interesting choice. Let's talk about, now the best part to me was the part where, you know, it was almost like, you know, this is how Brian Wilson got out of his room, because when they talk to Brian Wilson, he's in bed talking about how he has just spent the last 3.5 years in his bed looking at this ceiling, looking at these sheets, looking at his chest and smelling his cologne. And so he's,
you know what? After 3.5 years, I don't think he smelled like cologne. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah, I smelled and I was like, what? What? Because if I was, you know, the kind of person to stay in bed for 3.5 years, yeah, I just don't see the cologne being part of that scene.
I stayed in my room for about 3.5 years. It was like, all I could see were these walls and that ceiling and that, in this bed and this chest here, this chest of mine, you know, I could see that chest and I could smell my cologne and everything. But I mean, other than that, that was really what life was all about for me, you know, staying in bed. I mean, I was hiding away from everything and anything, and it was just one big hideaway, you know.
In the back of my mind, it was like, now, what is it that got him out of there? And then according to, it's not really according to this, but it's like John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd show up as police officers. Yeah, surf cops. They're from the surf cop thing. And they go up into his room and tell him that he's in violation of some California statute of not having surfed in so many days, months, weeks, or years. And so they haul him out of bed and take him down to the beach. And they have a cop car with a surfboard strapped on top. And they take him down to the beach and basically force him to surf, kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Like, when they get to the beach, Dan starts directing the waves like he's directing traffic, you know, in, out, stop.
Yeah, okay, he's directing the waves like, all right, come on, it's safe. He's ready to go. Come on, wave. Come a little this way. Come a little this way. Yep.
And I just have to say that Brian Wilson is not an actor, okay? They're like, Mr. Wilson, you have to go down to the beach. And he's like, I don't want to go down to the beach. You get sand everywhere. It's like he's a great singer and a great songwriter, but he's not an actor.
Yeah, it was not well executed. I love the idea. It's funny that in California, you're actually required to surf. And if you don't, the cops are going to come get you and they're going to make you go surf whether you want to or not. And they even like use the Beach Boys lyrics. I forget which one now, you know, that he's got to go surfing. And that was funny. It was a nice.
Yeah. But to me, that's the only part of the special that is the comedy part. That would be a written part. Everything else is interviews and concert footage and archival footage.
Right. Yeah. And it's 90% the Beach Boys playing music.
And like you said, the entire songs. They're not playing clips of songs. They are playing the entire song, which brings me to this question. I kept going back and forth. It's like when you're watching the concert footage, was it live music? I mean, did they record the music live, or did they record the concert and then put the soundtrack on top of the songs? I couldn't tell. I kept going back and forth. Some sounded like they were in the concert. Some sounded like they weren't, like they laid a track down, because sometimes when you record a concert, you can't get the live music because of just whatever ambient audio, you know, just all the noise surrounding the concert.
The first couple of songs definitely sounded live. Because you know how live music, and that occurred to me as well, that Mike Love was singing again at the very start. And it didn't sound, you know, nearly as good as, of course, the studio version is, that it reminded me of how the Eagles would wear earpieces so they could hear themselves sing, so they could stay on key and harmonies and everything. And you could tell early on, the first couple songs, that the harmonies were off, as they would be in a live performance, as opposed to a studio where you do it 27 times until you get it right. But when they did I Get Around, that seemed like it was off the record. That seemed like it was a studio version, interspersed with them playing it live. But I couldn't tell you for sure. But it was a pre-MTV music video kind of a thing. And
it's hydration season, get ready for the beach season, feel better about yourself season. It's a lot for those of us too busy to put our health first. And everything from your smartwatch to your mother is making you feel guilty about not feeling healthy enough. Introducing 310 Nutrition, home to 310 hydrates and lemonade mixes. These water enhancers make drinking more water easier, healthier, and more delicious, without the sugar and with all the great taste. Silence those watches and hang up that phone, and kick back with these ultimate water enhancers. 310 hydrates are full of key vitamins, electrolyte minerals, and bold and exciting flavors such as lemon lime, peach mango, wild berry, or the variety box to try them all. Plus, 310 lemonades have an energizing, satisfying ingredient blend with no sugar, with flavors like peach pear, watermelon, and kiwi strawberry. Right now, 310nutrition.com is offering 50% off up to $100 off your first order. So use the code SPRING24 and get your guilt-free hydration started today. That's 310nutrition.com, code SPRING24.
So the Beach Boys are Brian Wilson, Dennis Wilson, Carl Wilson. Those three are all brothers. Then Mike Love, who is a cousin of theirs. And then Al Jardine, who is just a friend. So those are the five members of the Beach Boys. And during this, you could see that Al, Mike, and Carl were sort of embracing the more flamboyant style at the time. Dennis, who's playing the drums, he's just in t-shirts and jeans. And Brian, he's on the keyboards and he's just wearing a Hawaiian shirt. And one of the things I'm thinking is maybe Brian didn't want to come back because he saw the way the Beach Boys, he saw the image that the Beach Boys were leaning to, and maybe that was something that he just didn't want to get back into.
One of the things I do know from watching other stuff on the Beach Boys, like how they made Pet Sounds, how they had to just fight, Brian Wilson wanted to fight, just get away from the beach music. In very similar method to the Beatles wanted to get away from being the Beatles, and they came up with Sgt. Pepper's, that he didn't want to do the same songs over and over again. He didn't, you know, there's only so many ways you can sing about driving fast cars and beautiful girls and beaches and the whole bit, that he wanted to move on and try new things. And again, I'm not a music professor, teacher, or anything other than a, you know, casual fan. Again, I just don't get what is great about, but I can be convinced. Okay. If somebody were to explain to me, well, the reason Pet Sounds is great is because they did this A, B, C, D. And then pretty soon you find other bands doing A, B, C, D. And then over here they did X, Y, Z. And then pretty soon you see their influence on that, on other bands who start doing X, Y, Z. So I'm open to, you know, somebody convincing me that I'm stupid and Pet Sounds is underappreciated. And that could well be.
Okay, speaking of an actual music professor, they had Brian Wilson's high school music teacher in this special. And they interviewed him. And he basically said that he failed Brian Wilson. Brian Wilson failed the music class, failed songwriting, failed the whole shebang.
Yeah, he said, I gave it an F, but it made $1 million.
At first, I thought it was a bit, like they had an actor play his music teacher, but as he spoke more, I realized it wasn't a bit. It was his actual high school music teacher, and he's just basically saying, you know, sometimes you got to break the rules to make $1 million.
Yeah, exactly right. That it was after Pet Sounds just, like, bombed. I mean, it was... like, nobody bought it, and the people that bought it. I mean, how many songs off of Pet Sounds can anybody listening tell me are on there? Everybody at the time was learning how to use technology to incorporate other noises and sounds into their rock and roll music. And again, I understand that Pet Sounds, you know, John Lennon and Paul McCartney talked about listening to it over and over and over again, and they started to try to apply that to some Beatles music that they were working on, but they didn't want to be the mop-headed Beatles from 1964 anymore, and they did manage to break away, and it worked. It stuck. And I think that was the difference with the Beach Boys. When they tried to move in a different direction and evolve musically, it didn't stick. And pretty soon they figure out, well, we can try a new song here or there kind of thing. But for the most part, we're not selling records. And the only way we're making decent money is through concerts. And that's another thing that I think is underappreciated, is how the only reason rock concerts began at all, the reason Buddy Holly was on that plane, was to sell records. That the point of the concert was to promote some songs that you wanted people to go out and buy, mostly 45s. And the Beach Boys were one of the first groups where the concert became an end of itself. That the concert wasn't there to promote a new music or new albums, although it may include a new song off of a new album or two. It was about nostalgia. It was about the classic songs. 90% of their concert, at least, are the classic songs. They're performing live, songs you've been listening to for 20 years. You actually get to see them in person, kind of a thing. And so the concert itself became the end unto itself. They weren't doing concerts to sell records anymore. They were doing concerts to make money off of the concert. But that was kind of a transition at the time. I mean, you know, Mick Jagger once said rather famously, you know, that he didn't want to still be singing Satisfaction when he was 40. And now, of course, he's 70 and he's still singing Satisfaction. But for a long time, the Rolling Stones would do concerts. And they wouldn't do Satisfaction just because it was so old and the whole bit. Now, I've seen the Rolling Stones 3 times. In 81, they did not do Satisfaction, but at the other two, they did Satisfaction. They finally became satisfied doing Satisfaction. Well,
Mick Jagger once did an episode of Late Night with David Letterman, and he was reading the top 10 list, and one of the on the top 10 was, nobody comes to the concert to hear the new stuff. So he must have basically come around saying that people want to hear the oldies and the goodies.
Yeah, there's a realization that a lot of these concerts about our nostalgia, I mean.
So Lorne Michael, he produced this and co-wrote this. And as far as I know, like, I knew Dan was really into the blues, and Belushi was really into punk. I don't remember either one of them being a Beach Boys fan. And like I said, as I just said, Lauren wrote this and produced this. But if I remember this correctly, I don't believe, and I'm within the first 5 years, that the Beach Boys were ever a musical guest on Saturday Night Live. And that being the case, I'm just sort of surprised, being all this Saturday Night Live talent was put into the special, and they were never on Saturday Night Live. And now that I think about it, maybe it was the Beach Boys. Maybe they thought that it wasn't a good idea. I was thinking that maybe Lauren didn't think the Beach Boys should be on, but maybe it was the other way around. Maybe the Beach Boys thought that it wouldn't be a good idea for them to be on Saturday Night Live.
I could see that. I could see the thinking being like, hey, if you know people are going to see us on SNL, why would they buy tickets to see us in concert? Or maybe, you know, maybe there's something going on that they weren't happy about the video there, but there's nothing in here that's in any way offensive.
No, it's basically a Beach Boys video album.
Something else that occurred to me while I was watching this, I was trying to think, who is the audience for this? You know, who is it that this is made for in 1976? You know, there's no MTV, so it's not like MTV, you know, behind the scenes kind of a thing, or behind the music. It's nothing like that. I assume it was done for some network television spot. But again, it's like, who is this being done for? Who is the target audience here? because there's just a little bit of information about it, but it's mostly the Beach Boys playing Beach Boys music.
Yes, and very limited comedy sketches with Dan and John in between the concert footage.
And a few actualities about the one guy standing in front of the record store with sunglasses talking about he'd worked with the Beach Boys and how much of a fan he was, you know, kind of a thing, which is fine. That's all great. But yeah, there wasn't, I mean, even in 1976, I mean, if you're a fan of the Beach Boys, I mean, I guess that's who this is for. Maybe they weren't like putting them in perspective, like, well, before the Beach Boys, this happened, and then after the Beach Boys, this happened. Or
they don't talk about their past at all.
Yeah, not at all. Just, you know, we were the number one, or blah, 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 this or that or the other thing.
They do bring up that they were all getting kind of jealous of Dennis Wilson because he was becoming the sex symbol of the group.
Right. He was starting to get all the attention and stuff, and he's wearing these, you know, tight white pants and everything. But yeah, there was some resentment. They show, there's a point where they're judging a beauty contest. And of course, it's all patriotic themed, and you're not going to learn anything.
They don't even go into reason or, you know, even give a reason why Brian Wilson was in bed for 3.5 years. That's just sort of glazed over. It's like, well, that's in the past. He's up now.
There's absolutely no insight that you get from this.
And there's not a lot of comedy in it. But I've always said this. It's like, when you see John Belushi in something, it's always, that always brings a warmth to me. Yeah, to see John Belushi in something, because he wasn't around that long. And I know he did 5 years, he did all those episodes of Saturday Night Live. But to see him in something outside of Saturday Night Live, that's always good to see, because there's, you know, he died so young and there's just not that much stuff of him. I'm rambling here, but it's just like, it's always good to see John Belushi in something because he died so young.
Yeah, he only lived long enough to make a few movies.
Yes, to see him is always nice for me, and, you know, to see him working with Dan, John and Dan working together, because I know how close they were, so to see them working as a team, that's always nice. But there's not a lot of comedy in this. And this special itself is hard to find. I had to scour the internet. I found the special on the site, but that the special that was on the site had the Dan and John clip cut out of it, but then that clip is on YouTube. So what I went was I went and took that clip from YouTube, put it in the original clip, put it in the original show, and then sent that to you. So that was the print that you had that you watched that you're doing this podcast on. Now, the music is great. The music is fantastic. This is something, if you did have it, you could just put it on in the background and just have the music play and, you know, just fill your house up with Beach Boys music while you're doing your chores.
Yeah, it's not like years later where, you know, Aerosmith is on SNL and they're having a discussion about whether or not socialism is an inevitable result of late capitalism and stuff like that. And it was just, you know, really funny. You don't see anything like that. Or Wayne's World, where Alice Cooper talks about how Milwaukee is the only city in America to have twice elected a socialist mayor, and was actually, the name is Milwaukee, which is the name of a tribe and the whole bit. You don't get like anything like that, which is, it really is, that's so funny to me.
It is funny, but also Alice Cooper is a pretty good actor. And as we've seen before, Brian Wilson is not, and I'm pretty sure the rest of the guys probably aren't that good of an actors too. So you have to be a pretty decent actor to sort of pull that stuff off.
I mean, maybe that's why they were never on SNL. Yeah, again, Belushi and Aykroyd are not, you know, nobody's watching this because, oh, hey, John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd is in this.
No.
Now. Yeah, not in 1976. So it is, when you think about it, you know, just kind of this bizarre little thing. It's like a, let's show that, to me, I'm thinking, are they trying to tell people that they should pay more attention to the Beach Boys or something? Or seems like they like the Beach Boys. Hey, let's do a little film about the Beach Boys.
I would say this is a TV movie or a TV special. And back in the 70s and 80s, a TV movie or a TV special, you'd hear that, dun, 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 you know, there'd be like this big opening. And it was a big thing in the 70s and 80s. We didn't have all these different channels, and it was usually like pretty standard programming. Usually we're getting the same thing every night of the week. So when a special came up, it was a big deal. So I'm pretty sure, like, in 1976, when this came out, this was a pretty big deal because it was something new and it was something different that the American viewing public, they just weren't expecting it at this time.
It's kind of a documentary that doesn't have much.
No meat in the documentary, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, hey, here's the Beach Boys in concert, and, you know, voila. And again, we have to remember the context of the time. No MTV where you could see even the Beach Boys were on MTV, you know, that they would go back and recut, take Beach Boys songs and recut them with modern videos, you know, that kind of a thing. They even made a music video of Jimi Hendrix songs.
And The Doors after Jim Morrison died.
This isn't what this is. And the music videos really are an art form that really show up in the 80s and become nowadays, you know exactly how to make a good big budget, you know, music video. That this is just, you know, I don't want to say it's embryonic, but it is just, I don't know why it exists.
The reason I think it exists is twofold. One, I think one reason it was just to pacify Beach Boy fans, because they knew there were a lot of Beach Boy fans out there. And I think they knew if they put a Beach Boy special out, a lot of eyes would be on it. And two, I think it was to recruit new Beach Boy fans. Maybe this was like, if their parents were Beach Boy fans, they would watch this with their kids and their kids would become Beach Boy fans. So I think it was twofold: to pacify the original Beach Boy fans and to bring in new Beach Boy fans.
That was kind of what I was thinking. It was about, hey, here's the Beach Boys. Isn't this music great? Oh, you didn't like that one? Here's this one. You didn't like this one? How about this one? Not that one? How about this one? Oh, how about this one? It's new. I mean, it's not like, and other movies that were around at the time included Gimme Shelter, you know, about the Altamont tragedy. Woodstock was had already been out. Other rockumentaries that were out there with substance, you know, especially Gimme Shelter, because they talk about, you know, the what led up to, during, and after Altamont kind of thing. And, of course, Woodstock won some Academy Awards for its coverage of Woodstock and the music and the bands and the whole bit. And this is like nothing like that. We're not following the Beach Boys. It's not even a Spinal Tap. You know, it's not even, this is Spinal Tap, you know, kind of thing. It's just like, hey, we have some videos of the Beach Boys in concert, and then we'll cut in a little bit of an interview with somebody trying to tell us that the Beach Boys are great, even though nobody likes them anymore. And except for old people, in that case, 25-year-olds.
Well, if you look at the audience at the concert that they filmed for this special, there are a lot of young people in that audience.
That's just it. I mean, 1976, I myself would have been just turned 18. You know, so I would have been right in that demographic. That's what I did notice as well when I saw some of the beautiful women on the shoulders of some of these other people dancing along and singing along to the Beach Boys music. I'm like, I wonder if she's still breathing on her own and is on a walker by now.
Okay, we're going to wrap it up here in a bit, but I just want to get your opinion on this. At the end of the special, Mike Love, he's up front, he's singing. And then he turns to Brian Wilson and said, hey, Brian Wilson is back. And this next song was written by Brian Wilson. And he basically writes all of our songs. I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he says.
I gotta get going here. Get out of bed.
This next song I'm gonna do is brand new from our album also. It was written by Brian Wilson. That's for sure. As most of our songs are.
So my question is, do you think he was taking a shot at Brian Wilson? Like, hey, Mr. Big Shot here, he's back and he's writing our songs. Or do you think, hey, okay, I'm really grateful for Brian Wilson, because if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have this career.
I think it's the latter, because I think he's I don't think they're taking a shot. He's just gotten out of his room, and they don't want him to go back into his room. And so I think he's just trying to say, hey, this guy here is an unrecognized musical genius, you know, kind of a thing that you guys really need to know, that he has written, you know, tons and tons of big hits, sometimes for others, mostly for the Beach Boys, that he's just a great, great guy. And we're really glad that he's here. And also, I mean, they do play that one song. That was the new song, and I've never heard it in my life. And I've listened. I mean, I tried to listen to the Beach Boys in the 70s and such, and it just, they tried to remain relevant. They even did a disco song that I remember watching the 4th of July concert on television. And they did a song about how after they're done surfing at the beach, they go to the disco, and then they did this disco song. And it was just awful. I mean, it was just as bad as you could imagine it be. All it had, you recognize, okay, there's a disco beat. And then after that, it wasn't a catchy tune or anything. It didn't have any great hook to it whatsoever. And that was the one thing the Beach Boys were so good at. Their songs had such great hooks to them.
Yeah.
You know, that you find yourself singing fun, 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 you know. You find yourself singing California Girls and great refrains and the whole bit. And this,
what I thought was kind of funny is he turns to Brian Wilson and said, hey, Brian Wilson, he writes most of our songs. And then they end the special by singing Rock and Roll Music by Chuck Berry.
That's what I'm glad you said that. Because when that happened, it's like, yeah, why are they showing at that point? It's like, if you didn't know any better, you might think they wrote that song, or Brian Wilson wrote that song, you know, because they're like you said, yeah, this guy is great. Now we're going to do a cover of a Chuck Berry song, you know, and it's like, maybe you should do one of his many, many, many hits, because they didn't even touch. You're not going to see all of the Beach Boys' greatest hits being performed here. You know, maybe I didn't count six songs, maybe eight. But, you know, when you look at the big songs that you really go back to, yeah, you don't see that. So I don't know. Maybe they're trying to sell a TV audience on, hey, the Beach Boys are still around. And look, they're kind of fun. And they're writing some new music. They're not just doing oldies. And, of course, like Mick Jagger pointed out, you know, that's what people want to see. They want to see the oldies.
Yeah.
They want the songs that they were listening to when they were young or younger. But yes, the fact that the audience was relatively young in 1976 and were, you know, there at that concert, again, mostly because everybody knew a Beach Boys concert was going to be a good time. Nobody's going to get trampled to death. It's not going to be, the fire concert or whatever that was. It's not going to be Woodstock.
It's not going to be The Who in Cincinnati.
Yeah, you're not talking. It's not going to be The Who in Cincinnati, which was not their fault. It's not going to be Woodstock 99, which was, you know, just a fucking disaster. So you're going to a Beach Boys, it's going to be a good time. They're not going to talk the next day that there were 17 heroin overdoses at the Beach Boys concert, kind of a thing. That again, the reputation was it was safe music. The Beach Boys, I mean, Paul McCartney did an interview in like January 67 talking about how great LSD is. And of course, nowadays, they're actually starting to look at LSD as a legitimate medicinal treatment for people, as long as they're not, you know, on their own kind of thing, and have somebody to help guide them back to reality as they come off it and the whole bit. But McCartney came out and said, hey, everyone should do LSD. It's freaking great. You know, that you would never hear that out of the
people. Was it McCartney or Lennon?
It was McCartney. Of course, Lennon, and that's when it was revealed. Now, up to that time, this is prior to Sergeant Pepper's, the Brian Epstein had put out this image of the Beatles as the British version of the Beach Boys. and they were all clean cut and the whole bit. Now, a friend of mine down the street here has a Beatles poster from about 1963 or 4, and in it, Ringo's smoking a cigarette. And I've thought for you, he still has it. I've thought about buying it and putting it up because that Brian Epstein made sure whenever there's going to be photo shoots and the whole bit, no cigarettes anywhere in sight. None whatsoever. And here's the big old Beatles poster. And there's Ringo's got a cigarette in his hand kind of a thing. That they knew that rock and roll music was still kind of considered out there. All these, you know, right-wing evangelical groups tried to get the music off the air, including Rush Limbaugh's dad, who owned a radio station and started this anti-rock movement, which was largely a religious movement to get rid of rock and roll. And they show that a little bit in the movie about Ray Charles, where even within the black community, the kind of music Ray Charles was doing was just not the kind of proper music that him.
Well, there's a scene where they're at a black church and they have a black choir backing them up while they're singing.
Yeah, so even within the black community, what Ray Charles was doing was too far on the edge. It was on the out. When John Lennon was shot and killed, there were people writing columns and stuff in the New York Times. They didn't know who he was. And they didn't understand why so many people had committed suicide and were unhappy because a singer had been shot and killed. You know, and it's really came across as a, you know, let them eat cake kind of a moment for the mainstream media. That Rolling Stone magazine was so very important back then. I had a subscription to Rolling Stone because that was the only place you could go prior to MTV to get any kind of news about music. So I really got into it for a short time. But when I walked away, man, I walked away completely from not only being a DJ, but also from music itself. I just kind of turned away from it. But there was a point where, you know, I'm reading every edition of Rolling Stone magazine. And that is where you got your counterculture news. That's where you got, you know, investigative stories about how bad these, you know, various people are. This new group that's showing up called Van Halen that they think is going to take the, you know, rock and roll by storm, and how they're changing rock and that kind of a thing. And negative comments from Pete Townsend about them. But, you know, so Rolling Stone was just out there all by itself. And today it's just all just so mainstream, you know, that the cultural change of rock and roll being something that's out there on the edge of society, counterculture. Even again, by the 80s, you know, you have the Secretary of the Interior considering the Beach Boys to be counterculture. And today, there is no such thing as counterculture. It's just culture.
So the special itself, it is hard to define. The clip of Belushi and Dan Aykroyd and Brian Wilson, that's fun. And the music is great, but this is hard to find. I had to scrub through the internet to find this, and there's not a lot of high qualities of it. You know, you really don't need to go out and try to find this special. The clips of Dan and John and Brian, they're on YouTube, and the music itself is out there on platforms and CDs and all that. So you don't really need to find this special. There's enough clips on YouTube, and of course the music is out there. That's all you really need.
Yeah, and it's not like, I mean, it's not like The Who live at Leeds, you know, where you're looking at the band at the peak of their performance and everything. I still love to watch Live at Leeds because it's just, it captures the energy and everything. This does that a little bit.
I would say there might be one reason to watch this, and the reason might be to see Brian Wilson performing after a 3.5-year hiatus. He doesn't do a lot in the concert itself. He just sits at the piano and plays. But if you are interested to see Brian Wilson's comeback, then I would say, yes, maybe try to find it. Maybe try to check it out.
Well, maybe that was the point. Maybe that was the point, that he had just got out of his room. And I do remember it making the news that he's come back out in public and said he's going to tour and do stuff again with the Beach Boys. And maybe that was part of it, was to just let people know, hey, the Beach Boys are going to be the Beach Boys again because Brian Wilson's back, kind of thing. I mean, obviously, everybody involved with the project, you know, started out being Beach Boys fans. Otherwise, you don't do this project. Unless you're trying to make the Beach Boys look bad or look silly or look irrelevant, you know, or Beach Boys fans to look like any of those things, for the same reason that Kimmel goes out onto the sidewalk and talks to people, you know, that you're trying to make them look bad. But yeah, that's why we kind of struggle with this, is why did they do this? And maybe that was it. He just got come out of his room and wanted the world to know that, hey, this guy's really unappreciated. And I can tell you, in 76, he was underappreciated. I think there's a much greater consensus now that this guy is one of the greatest American songwriters, at least, you know, in pop music history, rock and roll history, kind of thing. He's, you know, really way up there as far as commercial success and the whole bit. And, you know, music teachers are teaching kids to how to do Beach Boys songs.
All right. Well, we're going to end it right there. Timothy, I want to thank you for doing this, and we'll see here. And we'll see. No, let's try that one more time. I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll see everybody here back next time on the Dan Aykroyd Podcast.
All right. Thank you, Scott. I'll talk to you later.
See you later.
To support this podcast, please go to www.patreon.com/ScottWhite and give what you're able. If you're listening on iTunes, please give a review. That should help people find this podcast. And no matter what services you use to listen, please leave feedback. We always want to improve. Thank you for listening to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast.
Yes, may I help you?
Is there a Brian Wilson here?
Yeah, he's upstairs in his room. Why?
We got a citation for him, ma'am. Excuse me.
We'll find him. Thank you.
Certainly is nice up here in Bel Air.
Mm-hmm.
A lot cooler up here than it is downtown. Are you Brian Wilson?
Yes, I am.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wilson. We're from the Highway Patrol, Surf Squad.
Hello.
Brian, we have a citation here for you, sir, under Section 936A of the California Catch-a-Wave Statute. Brian, you're in violation of paragraph 12. Failing to surf, neglecting to use a state beach for surfing purposes, and otherwise avoiding surfboards, surfing, and surf.
Surfing? I don't want to go surfing. Now, look, you guys, I'm not going. You get your hair wet, you get sand in your shoes. Okay, I'm not going.
Come on, Brian. Let's go surfing now.
Everybody's learning how. Come on a safari with us.
Cross the Streams Media.
This has been a Cross the Streams Media Podcast.
On the son of the American Revolution, the revolution is still incomplete, and the Beach Boys handle it well, like sugar tastes just as sweet, no matter what you call it. And like I say, if they don't know what they're doing, if they're at half-cocked, I'd like to be half-cocked to think the way they do.